Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
I feel like I need a big glass of water after all that dry humor from Mr. Connor, but we'll get through it. Okay, a couple quick things I wanted to go over with you today, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see. First, I want to go around the world because I feel like we haven't done that in a while. International markets, you know, I've been keeping a close eye on some of these other stock indices that are indicative of what's happening in the global markets, especially some specific countries. You've heard us talk lately on the program about Japan and their monetary policy. They're basically trying to create a little bit of inflation by printing a bunch of money. We're not the only ones doing that, and their stock market has responded very strongly to that for the expectation that by devaluing their currency, which is they're deliberately doing against currencies like ours or the euro, that that will help their exports, which is true, and they are a heavy, heavy export-driven country. Their stock market is up over almost, well, let's see, 19%? Wow, and that's not an annual number, that's a year-to-date number. And we're only into what, the 2.5 months into the year? That's pretty remarkable. Who else has got some interesting performance? China, you know, we've been looking at China, and I think that China, everybody keeps expecting their numbers to be worse, and they keep coming out a little bit stronger. The stock market has yet to reflect that strongly. They're only up about 2% year-to-date, so there could be some opportunities in China. Hong Kong, similarly, 2% year-to-date. India is kind of flat. South Korea is flat. I'm surprised that South Korea hasn't actually lost a little bit more because of some of the saber rattling from their northern friends. And a couple of other interesting ones to note, Australia up 11%. Now, I think that has to do with expectations for China because that's a major trading partner and they have a lot of resources that the Chinese use to build all the stuff that they do. And Switzerland up 14%, Sweden up 10.5%. Well, that's about it. So those are some of the ones I wanted to mention to you that I thought were interesting. And of course, back here at home, we've been giving you daily updates, but looking at the year-to-date numbers, and this is exactly why it's important to have a diversification across large, medium, and small cap companies. The Dow, which are considered to be kind of the mega caps, up year-to-date a little over 10%. The S&P 500 index up 9%. The mid-cap stocks up 11%. And the small caps up 10%. That flies in the face of a little bit of an expectation that the small caps are your most risky and can give you the biggest return. But mid-caps right now, which are the more of a medium size, between $1 billion and $5 billion, something in that range, in terms of market cap, the total value of the company, are up the most. So just around the world and also looking at the different indices. Now, one other thing I wanted to get to today on the program is I always keep an eye, and I haven't done this lately, but I keep an eye on what's written in the newspaper by various publications, USA Today, the Wall Street Journal, of course, which I was just using to give you those year-to-date numbers. I keep an eye on these just because I like to see what other folks are out there saying, you know, what do people think about the markets, the economy? And the other thing is I want to see what is being written about different retirement-related topics. So one of the ones that I always keep an eye out for is anytime people talk about taxes as it relates to your retirement or your investing, and there is a retirement living column that is written in the USA Today Money section, which is, of course, that the green section that I always turn right to. And there's a Rodney Brooks that writes that, and he has, looks like, five things not to forget or be aware of when you retire. And the title of the article, yeah, there's five things, is The Tax Man Doesn't Retire When You Do. And you can Google that and look up the whole article. But there are five things, and I wanted to weigh in on this because I get these questions a lot. At my firm, we do tax work as well as the investments and the financial planning. We're doing tax returns for people. We do all of that. So I'm very tuned into the whole tax and retirement thing. So here are five tips that Mr. Brooks puts on the table or on the paper to think about. Number one, don't forget about taxes when you look at the size of that retirement nest egg. And he interviewed a gentleman over at Prudential from Robert Fishbein. Basically, the comment here is don't forget that if you're amassing this 401k or IRA or qualified money, 403Bs, 457, anything that hasn't been taxed yet, don't forget that you haven't paid tax on it. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. But I think the key thing to keep in mind is that if you're going to draw from your IRA or whatever your account is when you retire, and you're going to use that to supplement your income, don't forget that you're going to have to pay tax on it. Now, they use the example of drawing $3,000 a month, and if you're in a 30% bracket, which actually would be a pretty high bracket for somebody who's taking $3,000 a month, so you would have to have a lot of other income to get to a 30% bracket. Most people are in the 15% bracket or so than when they retire. Keep that in mind. so it may not be that bad a tax liability. But where you can get messed up, and this is something that they didn't really address in the article, and I wanted to add this, is where you can get really messed up is when you, and I saw this recently with somebody, and I'm in the process of helping them fix this with their retirement planning. Where you get really messed up is when you take large chunks out of your IRA. Let's back up here. Where did IRAs come from? Well, for a lot of people, they're a substitute for a company putting money away, so you're putting money away yourself, or they are a receptacle to roll your 401k, 403b, 457, your pension, all those things into when you retire. And let's back up even further. All of those things, those defined contribution plans, are all alternatives that were created to give the employee the ability to put money away for themselves and allow an employer to put a defined amount in instead of what? The old pensions. So ironically, what a lot of people do, and I advise this, and it works very well, keep the taxes lower, is when you retire, kind of treat that IRA 401k rollover as a pension. What I mean by that is drawing it out over your lifetime. Maybe you look at a program, a financial product, or an investment strategy that will let you have a high degree of getting that the rest of your life. Draw it out a little bit each year. Don't try to take it all out in one big chunk in 1 year. If you do that, your taxes will very well could go well over 30% or hit the top marginal brackets over 40% because of the size of withdrawal. And I saw a couple do this, and they've got a large tax bill they weren't expecting because they had a real, let's call it a passion, about a real determination to get their mortgage paid off before they retire. Well, they took the money out of the 401k. They would have been better off to refinance or to borrow the money and then use withdrawals each year from the 401k to pay down that debt. So you've got to be careful. So I agree with what the article said. You just have to be careful how you draw from 401ks. Your best bet is to draw them and not get up above really that 15 or so tax bracket if you can help it. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break, Lisa. I want to come back. There's several more points on the tax front, and it's tax season, so it's good to talk about. I've got four more things to discuss as it relates to taxes in your retirement. Stay tuned.
If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
And we're back. It's that time of year. We're talking a little bit about taxes and, of course, investing in your retirement. Those things are all, they all go together. And so the next item that was discussed in the article I'm commenting on about tax man doesn't retire when you do, USA Today. And the next point they said is to diversify your retirement assets by adding a Roth IRA, even if you are close to retirement. And the point there is that they're talking about tax diversification. And that sounds good. It's rather textbook. And what I mean by that, it may not be all that practical. I get the point that they make in the article that, hey, do this and you'll have some different, you know, flexibility. But most people don't want to convert to a Roth IRA because in order to convert to a Roth IRA, you have to pay what's called a conversion tax. Well, guess what that is? That's taxation at the marginal brackets. That might be that if you do too big of a Roth conversion while you're working or on top of other income, you may pay 25% bracket. You may go well into the 30s. I find for most people, 7 out of 10 does not make sense to do a Roth conversion. Now, back when they let you recognize the income over a five-year period when they first brought the Roth out, you were able to keep yourself in a lower bracket if you only had to pay a 15% each year. You take the total amount you've converted from a regular IRA or a 401k into a Roth, and you only have to pay tax on part of it. That may keep you in that 15% bracket, but I see, very rarely do I see it, and I just don't think it's worth it. So most of the time, I disagree with the article on this point. And so careful what you read in those newspapers. Okay, just be careful. I don't necessarily agree. In fact, the other thing is when you get into retirement, and I just dealt with this with a client I was working with, you need to be simplifying, not increasing complexity. So you don't need to be adding in another set of his and her Roth IRAs for a few thousand dollars. Now, if you're going to do a large conversion, there could be times when that makes sense, but most of the time it's not. So I wouldn't do it when you're close to retirement. I wouldn't do it for a small amount. You don't need to have 13 or 20 or 35 different accounts with all these different complexities. It's just more work. And the other thing is that is left out of this. This is a looking at the tax question only. It's a bit of a narrow way of looking at it because you've got to look at the practicality of investing in small Roth accounts. And you know what? Bigger is better when it comes to your choices for where you invest that money. If you say, I've got $2,000 in a Roth IRA that I converted from a regular IRA or $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever it is, your choices are not going to be the same if you were able to combine these various accounts and look at investing maybe, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever it may be. It's just your choices are going to be limited. So if you're looking just at the taxes, it is, that's myopic. It's too narrow of a focus. Number three, remember to pay your estimated taxes in retirement. Well, that's a great idea. Now, if you are drawing from your IRAs and 401ks and things like that, you can set it up to have that money withheld. You may be able to avoid having to make quarterly. I don't like quarterly tax payments. I think they're a nuisance. I think they're a headache. It's one more thing, again, to remember. So if you are drawing from your IRA again and your 401k and you're drawing income each month, you may not have to do those quarterly payments. Consult with your tax preparer. And, you know, make sure you draw enough, but just be sensible about it. Number four, even if you wait to age 66, you may not want to take your Social Security when you're first eligible. That makes sense. You've got to pay attention to if you're drawing money before your quote-unquote normal retirement age, you've got to watch those rules on earning too much income and then drawing Social Security. So we're talking about earned income. I'm not talking about, you know, withdrawals from IRAs or things like that. We're talking about wages. So you need to be careful when you take that Social Security. Just because you stop during the year, you may already have so much income because you made good income, even though you didn't work the whole year. So you got to be careful with that. I agree with that. And then the last, but certainly not least, is don't put your retirement planning on autopilot. I like that. You've got to pay attention. You know, there's a lot of talk right now about how much money you can take out of an investment and have it last you the rest of your lifetime. And it used to be we had this kind of a rule of thumb out there of a 4% withdrawal rate. You know, take $100,000, you could draw $4,000 a year and have a good chance of not running out. But a lot of that has been lowered. Expectations have been lowered because once you take 4%, you add on fees. Most things have fees. And you also compound that with the possibility of fairly severe market losses, depending on how you invest. That's an issue. And longevity. If you haven't gone out and taken a look at one of these longevity calculators, I think you should. I wrote about that in my book when I was researching, and there's one called livingto100.com. I did that. It's an interesting one. If you've got longevity in your family, you need to really take a hard look at how you're going to draw income from your investments. And maybe you want to shift some of the risk of how you're going to get income from your money. You might want to shift some of the risk. Maybe you keep some invested, maybe in a diversified portfolio. Maybe some of it is in stocks versus bonds through mutual funds. I tend to recommend that. And then maybe you look at a fixed annuity or some other vehicle that's going to give you a guarantee of income. There's nothing wrong with taking a kind of a hybrid balanced approach. All right. Lisa's letting me know I got to get another quick break in here. So let's do that. We'll come back and I'll talk about all that glitters is, well, you know what it is, gold.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, I had this question, and I know this is on a lot of people's mind. Gold. Should I invest in gold? That is the question, isn't it? Now, if you watch a cable news program, and I think this is very common, but some more than others. You know, you'll see old G. Gordon Liddy walk out on the television and say, I own gold and you should too. Well, maybe not. You know, and there's other folks that even are a little bit more aggressive about it. And I might agree with a lot of what they say, but when it comes to some of the talk about inflation, I'm not sure that I agree with this hyperinflation concept. I heard one commentator who's very well known say something to the effect, if you've got $10,000 in your bank account, now, a year from now, it's going to be worth $5,000. I think that's reckless. I think it's irresponsible, and shame on him. So here's the skinny on gold. If you want gold, there's plenty of places to get gold. Okay, that's not really a challenge. In fact, you probably heard us talk about this on the program. Scott and I have talked about gold's coming down. Well, if it's such a good thing and sure thing, as they would have you believe, those that are pushing gold hard, well, then what's going on? Always remember, you know, if somebody only does one thing, if a company is only selling gold, are they going to tell you it's a bad thing to invest in? No, it's always going to be better tomorrow. There are three reasons why people are drawn to gold. I'm not talking about jewelry or something like that, but there's three things. They look at it as some of the people are promoting it, talk about it. But one thing to look at with gold is it can be looked at as an investment, purely from an investment performance standpoint. And there are times when gold has done very well. There's no question about that. But it also has done badly at times. So you can look at it as an investment. I wouldn't put all my money into it. I wouldn't put in a diversified portfolio. I wouldn't put more than, say, 5%. You can do it through an exchange-traded fund. GLD is the ticker. You can go out and look that up. So that's a possibility. That's reason number one people do gold. Reason number two is what we call an inflation hedge. And there are times when gold has done very well against inflation. Again, it's kind of an investment piece here. But I will also tell you that if I look historically, I did this back when I was writing my book. I've got this in a chapter which I very much enjoyed calling Gold, Guns, Chickens, and Inflation is the name of the chapter in my book. And so the analysis I did was looking at inflation versus gold and the S&P 500 index. And what I found is that from the period 1980 to 2009, a 30-year period, inflation ran an average of just shy of 4%. Gold was just a touch over that at 4.3, but the S&P 500 index did about 12.8. Now, of course, you got to take fees out for investing and all of that. But if you're looking for a true hedge against inflation, and if you do believe, which it may or may not be, that prior performance is indicative of future results, then the stock market actually is a better hedge against inflation. Now, the third reason, which is where the pitchmen really try to get people's attention, is with the what I kind of call the Y2K scenario. Do you remember back when we were have our millennium, all the zeros we're going to click over for going to what, January 1st of 2000, Lisa, is that the date? And so when that happened, everybody was worried that computers couldn't handle it. So people literally got, and if this is you, don't take this personally, but it was a lot of people did this at the time. They got sucked into that and they pretty much got rid of everything and built an underground shelter and 27 years of food and water and all of this stuff. And some people get kind of caught up in that same mentality as it relates to gold. Well, let's be practical, okay? Let's say that the first two we talked about from an investment or as an inflation hedge, I get that. But if you really think the world's going to end or you really think things are going to go to heck in a handbasket, you got gold bars? Okay, so what? I ain't going to sell you my chickens. You know, if you really think that, then stockpile ammunition. I mean, or stockpile, you know, something like that, and that'll have more value because I can't eat gold. I can't shoot it. You know, and unfortunately, it's the folks that are trying to push the gold are going to talk to you about how we're printing more money than ever, how, you know, the government's going to take over your pension or your 401k tomorrow. You need to, you know, go get gold and go bury it in your backyard. Just take all this with a big, big grain of salt. Don't get sucked into that. If you want some gold in your portfolio, fine. If you want some physical gold to help you sleep at night, you know, and you want to buy a little, couple percent maybe of your portfolio, okay. But just don't go hog wild with it. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to join us next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.